Let's begin with our prayer. Dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God, to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit, and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. So I want to begin this evening with April the 4th, 1926, and we have some very wonderful messages from the Lord given to us this evening. Jesus is going to tell us that the divine will forms the complete resurrection of the soul in God. So all of you who are teaching others, please take very clear note of this, that this is a journey. I've been saying that for quite some time now, and that it involves literally that we are raised from the dead by the Lord. And all that's the death of self, the death of the world, the death of all the past, the death of unbelief, the death of unlove, everything. And we're raised to a completely new life in Christ. It's a very wonderful message. So Louisa said, finding myself in my usual state, I felt all immersed in my beloved Jesus. And my poor mind wandered through the divine knowledge. Now, know what she's saying. My mind wandered through the divine knowledge. She's not saying it wandered through beautiful ideas about God or wonderful texts about this, that and the other. No, she goes directly to the center, which is God himself. Everything was in silence on my part and on the part of Jesus. In other words, the Lord let her do it. That's her privilege. Nor am I able to say what I understood. That's 1 Corinthians 2:9. We don't have the ability to express the supernatural. Afterwards, however, Jesus assumed his teaching. The translation says speaking, which doesn't make sense in English. He resumed his teaching and said to me, my daughter, everything I do in the soul, it surpasses all that I did in creation. Now, that's a massive sentence. He says, every single thing I do in the soul, not the whole thing, not just the raising you from the dead, but every single thing, every movement, every grace, everything, he says, surpasses what I did in creation. See, each added knowledge of my perfections, which I manifest, and each truth, which pertains to the divinity, both of them form a new heaven that I extend in the soul. Now, you know that the Lord has said many times in history, behold, I make all things new. I want to give you some references for that. Isaiah 43:18, Revelation 21:5, and 2 Corinthians 5:17. Behold, I make all things new. That is what he's trying to do all the time, is to recreate who we are, because we spoiled his original creation and he wants to bring us back to his original idea. So each thing creates a new heaven inside of us. So he is in the act of creating all the time, all the time. So when you become very aware of your weakness and struggle, which, as you know, is very strong sometimes, you just say to the Lord, create in me a new heart. That's Psalm 51, the Miserere. Create in me a new heart. If you want me to live this life, create this life in me so that I can actually respond to you. Just the very fact of reminding ourselves that he is a creator solves an enormous number of problems as far as I'm concerned. as the soul rises in these truths. Now, notice we're not supposed to just read them and say they're nice. We're supposed to let these truths actually do their work inside of us. As the soul rises in the truths she has known in order to resemble her Creator, it is new suns that I come to form within the space of these heavens. Now notice within the space. And we've already dealt with the fact that he has to create a greater and greater and greater capacity within us to be able to receive all that he wants to give us. We don't have the capacity to begin with, but the more we respond to what he does, the more he actually increases our capacity. So that he not only gives you the grace, he gives you the ability to take it, and he creates the space for you to be able to deal with this. So the new heavens are arising in this new earth that we are, bit by bit, as we respond to the Lord. So each grace that I pour, and each time I renew her union with me, that's when we fuse with him. Each time are seeds that are laid in the soul. So the more often we fuse into the divine will, the better. If you can do it 100 times a day, that's absolutely fine. I have my own shortcut for that. I say, Lord, I want to fuse all of me in all of you all the time. That's just my shortcut. And so each grace that I pour, and each time I renew her union with me, these are seeds that are laid in the soul. And her love and her response form the sweet murmuring of these seas. Now, one of the things that Louisa reminds us frequently about, and it fascinates me considering that she was 47 years in bed, and that is the murmuring of the oceans. It's always something that has completely fascinated me since I was a child, just listening to the murmuring of the ocean. I say, Lord, the ocean is talking to you, and it is. And he said that our love for the Lord and our response to his grace is creating this murmuring in the seas of grace that he's given to us. And it also creates the mighty waves as the Spirit of God moves mightily in us. And these rise up to heaven and come to unload themselves at the foot of the divine throne. Now, Louise has been telling us in all the volumes up to now that we bring everything before the throne of God. Okay. As the soul practices her virtues. Now, there's an emphasis here on the fact that we don't give up being virtuous. We have to bring virtue to perfection through the divine will. As the soul practices her virtues, since the body too contributes to the exercise of them, that means we get a lot of challenge through the body and through its senses. And so we have a field of action in which to let the divine will work its way in us and for us to cooperate. The body can be called the little field of the soul. That's wonderful. It's the area where the soul has to work. And in the early stages of this journey, we have to work an enormous amount in the body to try and get what St. Francis of Assisi called Brother Ass to actually cooperate. And so the body can be called the little field of the soul, over which I lay the most beautiful flowery meadows, in which I delight in creating ever new plants, flowers and fruits. And notice, create. As soon as we give any response to him, it stimulates him to create. He is a creator, so creating is his thing, if I can put it in a very non-theological way. So then he goes on. And he wants to say that God is continuously creating in us. So he actually needs a continuous response from us as well, to give him the freedom to do that. Just as I am one single act, which after it is done once, is done forever. He only has to say, let there be light, and light is there forever. Let us make all this vegetation upon the earth, and he makes it, and it continues forever. Let us make the animals in the fields, and they continue forever. One act, but it is continuous. Creation also was only one single act. But just as in creation, my single act continues. How does it continue? By preserving it ever knew by preserving it whole and fresh. And that's the way my creating in souls must be continuous as well. I never stop, he says. So we've heard him say to Louisa over and over and over again, do not stop. You must continue. You must continue. And therefore, I recommend that before you sleep at night, that you lay your intentions before the Lord so that he knows that while you're sleeping, you're still busy cooperating with his holy will. I am always, always in the act of forming more beautiful things, surprising and new things, unless I find souls who close the door. Now, he will work in us unless we say no. The moment you says no, he will go. The Lord is the exact opposite of the enemy. You give him the tiniest chink, he comes in and he dominates and makes life impossible for you. The Lord is the exact opposite. If you say no to him, he will go because he gave you free will and he will respect it. So be very, very careful what you say to God. Very careful. So he does all these beautiful things unless he finds souls that are close to him. And these souls arrest my continuous act of creation. Now, if our closing the door to him arrests his continuous act of creation, that means then you deteriorate. Because we just read that part of his creation is preserving his creation whole and entire and completely new and fresh. So if we close the door to him in any area of our lives, that is going to cause disintegration. And it'll be our own fault, because we've not allowed the Creator to continue to work in us. But when that does happen, he said, I find another device. I abound, I multiply my continuous act in the souls who keep the doors open. In other words, he keeps the rest of us interceding for them and substituting for them and making reparation for them so that they will open the door again. So I abound and I multiply my continuous act in the souls who keep the door open. And with them, I delight and continue the office of Creator. So I want to give you Psalm 118, verses 19 to 24 for that. But do you know where this continuous act of mine is never interrupted, he said. It is in the soul who lives in my will. So somebody asked me a few weeks ago, what precisely do you mean by saying lives in my will? And I can only give you my own opinion. As far as I'm concerned, living in the divine will involves every thought, every word, every action, every desire, every motivation, everything. That's what living in it is. I'm living in the air. I'm breathing that air day and night. Even when I'm asleep, I'm breathing. So I'm living in the atmosphere. Okay? A fish lives in water. It is there 24/7, 365. The fish wouldn't know what land was. So living in the divine will means being completely immersed in the divine will. It's permanent. It involves every single part of me. Okay. So when we give this commitment to the Lord, the divine will then prepares our souls to be the true brides of Christ and brides that are totally given to him. So to me, that's what living in the divine will is. And I would distinguish it from saying beautiful prayers in the divine will. Because if you say a beautiful prayer, as we've just said, the rosary in the divine will, and you have fused yourself at the beginning of that rosary, then you are fused for the length of time of that prayer. But what about all the rest of it? Some people can make the mistake of thinking, I'm living in the divine will if I say these beautiful prayers, and I might scandalize you by saying that I think you can prove you're living in the divine will even without saying any of those prayers, because it's every thought, every word, every action, every motivation, every desire, every movement, everything inside of me. Okay, it's terribly important for us to realize that. So this is 100% commitment to the Lord, and that's why in the early volumes I kept on giving you Deuteronomy 6:4-10. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord with all 100% your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your being. Now, the Lord asked that at the time of the Exodus, so he's asking that of us at a much higher plane, living in the divine will. So the soul who lives in the divine will gives him complete freedom to act. Ah, yes, Jesus said, only in her can I do freely what I want. Notice the freely, because the will has been handed over in union with the divine will, and therefore the divine will is free to act. If the human will is still operating, then the divine will finds blocks within the soul. So only in one living in the divine will can I act freely whenever I want. Notice the whatever I want, and it's also whenever he wants as well. Because my will, which the soul contains, prepares her for me to receive my fiat that came out of creation. So the divine will works in us to enable us to open up and truly, truly, truly surrender to the divine will. When you consider that this is a lifelong struggle for us, it is an absolute, incredibly wonderful marvel that our Blessed Mother had this from the very first instant of her being. Therefore, we have to be always attentive. Let your flight be always in my will. Let your fusing be always in my will. Always commit yourself. Always, always, always. So in the next paragraph then, Jesus explains that it was his resurrection that put the seed of resurrection in place for us that would enable us when we were ready to rise from the dead. Now, spiritual writers in the centuries before us would speak about conversion as a rising from the dead, and correctly. And so in dealing with the divine will, the Lord is speaking about that at its highest plane. After this, Louisa said, I was thinking about the resurrection of our Lord, and coming back again, he added, my daughter, my resurrection completed, sealed, and returned to me all honours, which were taken away, of course, in this passion and death. It called to life all my works, which, of course, were now permanent forever. All the works which I did in the course of my life on earth, and it formed the seed of the resurrection for souls. So Jesus' resurrection forms the seed for us to be able to rise again. I can only rise because he rose. If he didn't rise from the dead, I couldn't. It's not actually possible. I live because he lives. If he didn't live, I couldn't live. I would never have been brought into being. So, these form the seed of the resurrection of souls, Jesus said, and even of the bodies in the universal judgment, which you read about in Revelation 21, verses 11 to 13. So, without my resurrection, my redemption would have been incomplete, and my most beautiful works would have been buried, because everybody would have said he was a complete failure once he died on the cross. It was the resurrection that put the QED on absolutely everything. So he said, it's the same for the soul. If she doesn't rise again completely in my will, there's your total surrender, 100%. It can't be 99.9. If she does not rise again completely in my will, all of her works will remain incomplete. It will never reach the level that God wants. So, if coldness for divine things creeps in, watch this carefully now. If passions oppress her and vices tyrannize her, these will form the tomb in which to bury her. Now, I'll give you that in very simple English. It's an awful lot easier and quicker to fall down a mountain than to climb it. So, these will form the tomb in which to bury her, because since the life, notice capital L, the life of my will is missing, the one who makes the divine fire rise again will be missing. It's only the divine will truly living in us as life, not just as something totally outside of us, but as life, as the center of life in us. If that is missing, then the divine fire that enables us to rise again will be missing. The one who, with one blow, kills all passions and makes all virtues rise again will be missing. That one is the divine will. My will is more than the sun, which eclipses everything, fertilizes everything, and converts everything into light, and forms the complete resurrection of the soul in God. So you can see, therefore, and I'm saying this particularly for those who are teaching others, you can see that it's not conversion to the divine will that we're talking about. That's at level one, way back before volume one of Louise's writings. It's back in the lower spirituality. That's where conversion is. What you have here in the divine will is complete 100% resurrection to the level of spirit. A fantastic message, and it needs to be gone over very, very slowly. So on April the 9th, 1926, Jesus compares virtues and the divine will. So this is where we were in the past and where we are to be. So Louisa said, I was thinking to myself, my sweet Jesus says so many great and admirable, highest and wonderful things about the divine will. And yet it seems to me that creatures don't have that concept, which is absolutely true. How many people could you talk to about the divine will? They don't have that concept which the divine will deserves, nor that great impression of the wonders that are in it. In other words, people are ignorant of what the divine will truly is. On the contrary, it seems that they place the divine will on the same level of the virtues. Now, please, will you put a VIP on this or a yellow sticker or something if you are a teacher? Because here's one of the answers that you need for people who object to the divine will. And unfortunately, the people that I have dealt with who objected to the divine will were priests and religious. And they'll tell you, we're already committed to the divine will. As a community of sisters said to me once, but we have vows of obedience to the divine will. You don't. I said, but I'm not speaking at that level. And even having spoken to them intensely for an hour, they didn't get it at all. They just thought I was a bit strange. And so Louisa is talking about something terribly important here, that the vast majority of people put the divine will on the level of the virtues. In other words, I'm keeping the commandments. What are you talking about? I've never robbed a bank. I've never killed anybody. What are you talking about? You know, so you put the virtues on the same level, and that's lethal. And maybe they care about those more than they care about the most holy will of God. In other words, in the ordinary spirituality, you have people caring more about growing in humility and growing in patience and growing in this and growing in that and growing in the other. And they're concentrating on that instead of concentrating on the divine will itself. In other words, going to the heart of the matter. So Jesus moved in Louisa's interior and said, my daughter, do you want to know why? And the answer is yes. Because their palates are not purged. Now, this is VIPPPP. Put green, white and gold marks on this one. Their palates are not purged. In other words, they have not been purified of the past. They only have a taste for what they knew in the past. They have no taste for this higher spirituality. That's like saying, I'm a teacher in school and I have a class of six-year-olds in front of me, and I want to teach them trigonometry. Well, now I'm going to lose their attention on the first sentence. They've no taste for that. But if I do ordinary adding and subtracting and multiplying with numbers they're able to handle, oh yeah, they're interested. And so the problem you have with people still on the level of the virtues is that their palates are not purged, and they are accustomed to the ordinary foods of the low world, which are the virtues, and not to the celestial and divine food, which is my will. So here you're dealing with food on two completely different planes. This celestial food is appreciated only by those who consider the earth, material things, and even people as nothing. You're probably going to have a problem with that one. Or is fully ordered by God. Many people misunderstand relationships in a family. And they seem to think we put that before everything else. The answer is we put God before everything else. We put the divine will before everything else. As Peter and John said to the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 4 or 5, he said, we have to listen to God rather than men. You put God first. And therefore, the living on the level of the divine will is a spiritual plane that the people around you will not understand. And therefore they'll misunderstand you and there will be problems because of that. Now, to treat people as nothing, that doesn't mean they've no value. That doesn't mean you don't love them. But it's the nothing by compared with the infinite. It's the nothing compared to the all. And then he adds the next little phrase, which I think is very interesting, that you treat them as fully ordered in God. Now, the problem is if you're talking to someone who is fully disordered with drugs, drink, alcohol, sex, whatever the thing is that's disordering them, and treat them as fully ordered in God, they wouldn't be able to cope at all. But in a good family situation where relationships are fairly okay, yes, you can treat them at your own level. The virtues which can be practiced on earth are rarely exempt from human purposes. This is terribly important. What that means is that if you are not completely given to God, there's always the element of what's in it for me. What can I gain? You may have seen ads, as I've seen them on television, in which a person is being asked, you know, why are you doing this wonderful thing? Like you're going to some country and helping people in dire need. And you often get an extremely inadequate response. I enjoy it. It makes me feel good. Now, that's the level of the virtues. And it's very much lower than living in the divine will. There's something in it for me. Okay. So Jesus says that the virtues, the level of the virtues which can be practiced, are rarely exempt from human purposes, from self-esteem. In other words, I enjoy it, I get something out of it. From self-glory, well, I'm better than the rest of them. I mean, they didn't go to Africa and go to some war-torn country. Love of appearing, I think it's very interesting. In other words, you want to be seen. You want to be interviewed, you want to be noticed. Or the need to please people. Now, the need to please people is very, very common. In other words, that life will be easier if I just give in and please them. But giving in and pleasing people can bring you down your mountain from the divine will to a very low level rather quickly. And it will make you compromise in areas that you shouldn't compromise in. And so, in giving you the detail here, the Lord is telling us just how serious our commitment to him really is. All these aims that he has just said, the self-esteem, the self-glory, love of appearing and pleasing people, are like many tastes for the ordinary palate. Notice ordinary, the ordinary palate of the soul. In other words, you can handle this, you're used to it. And many times one operates more for the tastes than for the good that the virtue contains. That is the answer I gave you. It makes me feel good. I feel better for doing it. In other words, I am doing it to gain something for myself. They may not realize it, but it's actually the words come out when they're asked. It's really sad in a way. So this is why the virtues fail more easily. The word in my page says breach. I think we would use the word fail for there. This is why the virtues can fail more easily, because the human will always gains something. Now, when the human will gains something, it cannot be completely given to God. Not at all. And that's why the Lord tells us over and over and over again that the human will has to be sacrificed. On the other hand, the first thing that my will knocks down is the human will. And it tolerates no purpose which gives of the human. So here you're seeing the exact opposite of what we've just been reading now. So this is a plane which is so much higher. So if I can give a very unworthy example here, it would be the difference in sailing to another country in a small boat and flying in a 747. They're just two entirely different experiences. And so the Lord will not tolerate in us something where the human will can gain. Because the more the human will gains, the less the divine will can reign. My will is from heaven, and it wants to place in the soul, now inside of the soul, so the room has to be made for it, that which is divine and which belongs to heaven. Therefore, everything that smacks of the low earth has got to go. Therefore, one's own self remains on an empty stomach and feels itself dying. The ego has to go. It has to go. Not my will, but thine be done, I've said to you, has got to be our motto. I've said it from volume one. Okay, not my will, but thine be done. So the ego has to go. So in feeling her own ego dying and in losing the hope of having any other food left, the soul makes up her mind to take the food of my will. And sometimes in order to help us to really make that decision, the Lord has to allow us to be disillusioned about something or other that we were expecting to get some benefit from. And so it's in our poverty that we turn to him. And as she takes this divine food of the divine will, her palate is purged. In other words, you are slowly trained to appreciate spiritual things as distinct from the earthly things. And in case you think I'm putting the banner too high, just do a tiny reflection after the class and say to yourself, the people around you, they may in fact be in the same house, and they may just be people around you, as in your neighbours or anything, what they would do for recreation, would it be what you would do now? Have you changed? Her palate is purged, and she feels the taste of the food of my will, which is such that she would not exchange it at the cost of her life. So in the next paragraph then, the Lord says, no compromise. What I want is total transformation, and it has to be 100%, not 99.9. Human beings like keeping something back. My will does not know how to compromise, he said. The virtues do. And the virtues do with the low and the little things that are done on the earth. Rather, the divine will wants to keep everything and everyone as a footstool at its feet, that is, sacrificed. And the divine will wants to change the whole interior of the soul. In case you don't know where you're going, would you ever take that little phrase off the page and write it on a separate sheet of paper and realise that's what he's after? He wants to change the whole interior of the soul, because we have come from a very worldly situation. We've come from very worldly influences. And so the Lord has to create new heavens and a new earth inside of us. I want to change the whole interior of the soul. And the very virtues, I want to change them all into divine will. So that when you love, you're loving divinely. When you forgive, you're forgiving divinely. You're not just forgiving grudgingly at a lower level. In a word, the divine will wants its own heaven in the depths of the soul. Now you can call this a new Bethlehem, a new Bethany, a new Nazareth, whatever you want. But he wants his own heaven in the depths of the soul. Otherwise, it would remain hindered and would not be able to carry out its divine life. So here is the great difference that exists between the virtues and my will, between the sanctity of the virtues and the sanctity of the divine will. And this is where we have to explain to people that the sanctity of the divine will is the highest level of sanctity possible for us. And the amazing thing is that it's being offered to us at a time of terrible crisis in the church and the world. So here's the great difference that exists between the virtues and my will, between the sanctity of one and the other. The virtues can be of creatures and can form a human sanctity at the most. But my will is of God. And it can form a sanctity which is truly and fully divine. And that is our vocation. What a difference. However, since the creatures are used to looking down below, they're more impressed by the little lamps of the virtues than the great sun of my will. Now, I want to illustrate that by a story that happened when I was a child. It was just after I was born during the Second World War, so life was very difficult for us all, and money was extremely scarce. And at one stage, we had visitors to our home, and one of my aunts offered my youngest sister a white penny. In those days, we called it a half crown. And the child had never seen one of these silver things before. And two big tears came down her face and she said, "But don't you have a brown penny, 25 times less value?" And afterwards, we showed her what she had chosen as distinct from what was offered to her. And many, many years later, I said to the Lord, "Why does that story stay with me? And why does it still hurt?" And he said, "I allowed you to feel what I feel when people ask me for trifles and I can give them everything. They ask me for little human trifles and I can give them the divine will and divine sanctity and I can give them absolutely everything and all happiness and all beatitude, even on this earth. I can give them everything and they ask me for trifles." And so that's the reason why I'm giving you that little story, because for me, it actually illustrates his pain. Okay, so now he's going to give an illustration. And of course, his favorite image is always the sun. So Louisa said, "Afterwards, I found myself outside of myself in the act in which the sun was rising. All things changed their appearance. The plants became brilliant. The flowers received the life of their fragrance and of the different colors which the light of the sun brought to them. All things received, sip by sip, the life of the light of the sun in order to develop and be formed. And yet the light and the heat were just one thing." It is a very awkward sentence there, which I've made into ordinary English. "And you couldn't see anything else. It's just light and heat. But where did so many effects come from? And where did all these different colours which it gave to nature, where did they come from?" And so my sweet Jesus said, "My daughter, why does the sun contain the seed of fecundity, the seed of the substance of all colours? It's because the sun, that light is greater than the goods that it contains. And therefore it keeps them all eclipsed within itself. You look up and you only see light." And he has said this many, many times in the volumes, "You cannot give something you don't possess." In the same way, the sun would not be able to give either fecundity or sweetness or fruits or colour to flowers, nor could it work so many wonders on the earth as to transform it from the abyss of darkness into the abyss of light, if it didn't have all of that stuff within itself. "So the sun is the symbol of my will," he said. "As the divine will rises over the soul." Now remember the sun rising and changing everything. "It brings her to life. It vivifies her. It bejewels her with graces. It gives her the most beautiful shades and divine colours. It transforms her in God," 2 Corinthians 3:18. "And it does this all at once. It's enough to let it rise for it to operate wonderful things." And that's why the most important thing is for us to fuse in the divine will and stay there. And stay there. All of me in all of you, all the time. Okay, stay there. Because once the divine will is free to operate in the soul, he will do his divine things. It transforms her in God. Not into God, but in God. It's a divine transformation. "And the divine will does this all at once. By giving, my will loses nothing, just as the sun loses nothing by doing so much good to the earth. On the contrary, it remains glorified in the work of the creature. Our being is always in perfect balance. And when we reach the pinnacle, we'll be in perfect balance as well. All ordered, body, soul and spirit. It neither increases nor will it decrease. But do you know how this happens? Well, imagine the sea full to the brim. A wind invests its surface and forms its waves, which overflows outside. In other words, you get a tsunami. In swelling, the sea has lost nothing. And just as the water has overflowed outside, so have they immediately risen. They appear at the same level as before. The sea never appears to ever lose, no matter what it does. And the sun appears not to lose anything, no matter what it gives either. So the same happens between the soul and God, is the very important thing that Jesus is aiming at. She can be called the little wind. Now, this is the soul, which forms the waves of the divine sea in such a way, and we would do that by our prayers and our rounds, in such a way that she can take as much water as she wants. Now, you know, I could give you an endless number of references there, including Isaiah 55:1, come and drink of the waters. The water in the scriptures represents salvation. And she can take as much as she wants. But our sea will remain always at its level, no matter what we take. We are so tiny by comparison with the infinite that it is infinitesimal what we could take, even if we took everything that we needed. Our sea always remains at its level because our nature is not subject to undergoing change, is the word. We're sort of into mutations now with this pandemic. Therefore, the more you take, the more delight you give to me and the more glorified I will be in you. In other words, he's saying, open yourself up, let God be God, and allow yourself to live at this divine level. So in the next paragraph then, he's such an excellent teacher, he goes over it and over and over it again. So he says, your choice is to choose the human or choose the divine and take the consequences. But the choice is yours. You've got free will. So afterwards, Louisa was thinking about the difference between one who lets herself be dominated by the will of God and one who lets herself be dominated by the human will. At that moment, I saw a person before my mind, bent over, her forehead touching her knees, covered with a black veil and wrapped within a thick fog, which prevented her from seeing the light. Now, there's a very, very good image of someone living in the human will, dominated by the human will. Poor one, she seemed to be drunk and staggering. She fell to the right and then to the left. Truly, she aroused pity. Now, as I was seeing this, my sweet Jesus moved in my interior, telling me, my daughter, this is the image of one who lets herself be dominated by her own will. Now, you really need to go back and read. And if you can draw that image, and it'll stop you from living in the human will. The human will bends the soul so much that she is forced always to look to the low earth. I want to give you 1 Corinthians 2:14. The unspiritual don't get it. They just don't. She's forced to always look at the low earth. And by looking at the earth, this is what she knows and what she appreciates. This knowledge and this love form so many exhalations. They form that thick and black fog which enwraps her completely and removes her from the sight of heaven and the beautiful light of the eternal truths. Therefore, the endowment of the human reason is left drunk with the things of the earth. Now, what I'm going to read now is a perfect description of our society today. Okay. Therefore, the endowment of the human reason, because our society worships the reason, is left drunk with the things of the earth. And so she does not have a firm step. She staggers to the right and to the left, wrapping herself more in the thick darkness that surrounds her. And the world today is literally embedded in thick darkness. Therefore, there's no greater misfortune than a soul who lets herself be dominated by her own will. Now, that's as clear as daylight. So, the complete opposite works for the person who is dominated by the divine will. My will makes the soul grow straight. Now, that's the biblical image of the palm tree. And I want to give you Psalm 92, verses 12 to 15. You grow tall and strong like the palm tree. So the palm tree grows up towards heaven. It's not bending down towards the earth. She grows straight in such a way that she cannot bend towards the earth. You see why I'm giving you the image of the palm tree? But she always looks at heaven. Her constant looking towards heaven forms many exhalations of light which envelop her completely. This cloud of light is so thick that, eclipsing all the things of the earth, it makes them all disappear, and in exchange it makes reappear for her everything that is of heaven. Now, in the former case, the darkness enveloped the person and made them look to the earth for everything, and they lost their connection with heaven. In this case, the person is looking towards heaven all the time, and the earth is put in its place. So it's an entirely different perspective. So it can be said that heaven is what this soul knows, and that all that belongs to heaven is what she loves. My will renders her step firm, and therefore there's no danger that she will stagger even slightly, because you are strengthened by the divine will. And the beautiful endowment of a healthy reason. Now, notice the last person was operating reason, but it wasn't a healthy one. Because the people today who worship the reason are living completely unreasonable lives. So a healthy reason is so illumined by the light that envelops her as to move from one truth to the other. So she can move quite easily in the divine. This light, which of course comes to her as infused knowledge, uncovers for her divine mysteries, ineffable things and celestial joys. Now don't forget that when you are looking and reading and trying to take on board the teachings that are in these writings, to ask the Lord for this infused knowledge, to ask him for this enlightenment, and to ask him to lift your eyes heavenward. Therefore, the greatest fortune for a soul is to let herself be dominated by my will, he said. She holds supremacy in everything. She occupies the first place of honour in the whole of creation. That's Romans 8:19. She never moves away from the point at which God delivered her. God finds her always on his paternal knees. This is the most wonderful image of the relationship we have with God in the divine will. We're always on the paternal knees, which I think is brilliant. And if you remember that, it'll make interceding for others an awful lot easier. God finds her always on his paternal knees, singing to him his glory, his love, and his eternal will. So, since she is on the knees of the eternal Father, the first love is for her. The seas of graces which overflow continuously from the divine womb are hers. The first kisses, the most loving caresses, are all for her. Only to her can we entrust our secrets, because being the one who is closest to us, and who remains more with us, we let her share in all of our things. Now, there's a very quick summary of whole volumes that we have just been reading. Okay. As I was thinking about us being on the paternal knees, the thing I remember is a statement of Saint Therese of Lisieux. She was asked by her community once, was she afraid of judgment? And she said, of course I'm not afraid of judgment. I'll be sitting on his knee when he's judging the earth. It was an absolutely brilliant response to give. So the sitting on the paternal knees is the position of highest intimacy with God. And therefore, of course, the hugs and the graces and the blessings and everything go to you before they go to anybody else. So the enormity of the privilege that we have cannot be exaggerated. And notice that the Lord says that this soul remains more with him than anybody else. So we let her share all our things. We form her life, her joy and happiness, and she forms our joy and our happiness. It's mutual, because love is mutual. And the effects of love are mutual. Okay. In fact, since her will is one with ours, and since our will possesses our very happiness, it's no wonder that by possessing our will, the soul can give joys and happiness to us. And so we make each other happy. Okay. So giving joy and happiness to God. Look at Proverbs 8:31. So in the next paragraph, then, we have the wonder of living in the divine will. Then my poor mind continued to think about the difference that exists between one who lets herself be dominated by the supreme will and one who lets herself be dominated by the human will. And my greatest and only good added, my daughter, my will contains the creative power. You've heard him say that hundreds of times now. Therefore, it creates in the soul the strength, the grace, the light, and the very beauty which the divine will wants its own things to be done by the soul. In other words, the Lord creates in us what he wants to find there. He's not going to get it any other way. So I want to give you Psalm 51 verses 10 to 12. Create in me clean heart, O God. And don't forget that we can ask the Lord to create in us whatever we perceive is not available or whatever is missing. And he loves creating. He just likes an invitation. It's really good. So, number one, the soul feels a divine strength within herself, as if it were her own. Number two, the soul feels a grace which is sufficient for the good that she must do, or for a pain that she must suffer. Number three, the soul feels a light or infused knowledge, which as though naturally makes her see the good that she does. And attracted by the beauty of the divine work that she performs, she rejoices and she makes feast because the works that my will performs in the soul carry the mark of joy. Some of you are doing Revelation with me, and you know that there was the mark of Cain in the book of Genesis, and there's the mark of God's children in the book of Revelation, and there's the mark of the beast for those who are giving themselves to damnation. Okay, so the soul carries the mark of joy and perennial feast. Now, here's a little key, because throughout these writings, you are given little keys all the time in which you can test that you are actually in the divine will. And that is, you notice that people living in the divine will are actually very joyful people. They may be suffering, but they're still full of joy. Okay, that's one of the marks of a person living in the divine will. This feast was started by my fiat in creation, but it was interrupted by the split of the human will from that of God. And as the soul lets the supreme will operate and dominate, the feast resumes its course, and the amusement, the games, and the delights continue between the creature and us. That's Psalm 36, verse 8, the delights in God. There's no unhappiness or sorrow within us. How could we give it to anybody else? And so if these souls feel unhappiness, it's because they leave the divine will and enclose themselves in the little field of the human will. There's the slipping back. Therefore, as they return to the divine will, they will find the joys, the happiness, the power, strength, light, and the beauty of their creator. So everything is positive and glorious in moving towards it. Everything is terrible in moving away from it. And so we can use that as a discernment for ourselves. Therefore, it's always a feast between us and the soul. So whether she has joy or even sorrow in life, she will still be fine. So the next paragraph, we're back to the disaster of living in the human will. On the other hand, it's very Jewish to say on the one hand and on the other hand. That's the way they speak. And I just noticed this very Jewish thing in these writings, and I absolutely love it. On the other hand, in the human will, there's not a creative power, which if one wants to exercise the virtues, might be able to create patience. How often you would have liked to create patience, wouldn't you? It can't create humility or obedience or anything like that. And this is why one feels hardship and fatigue in order to be able to practice the virtues. Because the divine strength that sustains them, the creative power that nourishes them and gives them life, is missing. And so what do you have? Inconstancy. And one passes easily from virtues to vices, from prayer to dissipation, from church to amusements. Oh my goodness, have you ever noticed that on Sundays? From patience to impatience. All this mix of good and evil produces unhappiness in the creature. And that's where people are at who are only living at the level of virtues. They can go very easily from one to the other without even realizing it. On the other hand, one who lets my will reign within herself, she feels firmness in good. She actually feels that constancy within her. She feels that all things brings her happiness and joy. More so, since all the things created by us carry the mark. Here we're at the mark again, the seed of joy and happiness. So there's the mark, he's telling us, of someone who lives, truly lives in the divine will. There is joy and happiness in that soul, even if they're sick or suffering or bereaved or anything else. So they carry the joy and the happiness of the one who created them. And they were created by us so that all of them might bring happiness to man. Each created thing has a mandate from us to bring to the creature the happiness and the joy it possesses. So there is the joy you get from plucking a beautifully ripe apple off a tree or pulling up some wonderful vegetation from the ground, the joy that it actually gives to you. And the Lord is saying to us, that joy and happiness was put into that thing for you. In fact, what joy and happiness doesn't the light of the sun not bring? What pleasure do the blue heavens, the flowery field, a murmuring sea not bring into one's sight? We get such joy at looking at the beauty of nature. What enjoyment do a sweet and tasty fruit, some very fresh water, and many, many other things not bring to you? All created things say to man in their own mute language, we bring you the happiness and the joy of our Creator. But the sad thing is that somebody living on the lower level won't even notice. They will take the fruit and they'll take the vegetable and they'll enjoy the meat of the animals and so on without any gratitude to God. So do you know in whom all created things find the echo of their joy and happiness? Of course, it's in the one they will find my will reigning and dominating. So there is a reciprocal thing going on between all the creatures that God has made. And it's no harm to imitate St. Francis in actually thanking the plants. Primitive peoples always remembered to thank an animal that they killed in order to give them life and to thank the plants for actually giving them the health that they actually needed. Sometimes our grace before meals is a bit starchy and it's not in relation to the plants and the animals who have given their lives for us. But to thank them for their sacrifice to give us life would actually remind us of our rounds much better. So in one in whom they find my will reigning and dominating, because that will which reigns in them as a whole, that which God himself possesses, and that which reigns in the soul become one. You see, it's the same divine will in God and in us becomes one. And it makes seas of joy and happiness and contentment overflow into one another. So in this final paragraph for tonight, the Lord wants to say to us that for us to live in the divine will is not only the greatest thing for us, it's the greatest thing for God as well. He has managed to get his creature up onto the level that he wanted all the time. Therefore, my daughter, every time you fuse yourself in my will, and please do it hundreds of times a day if you can, and you go around through all created things to impress your love, your glory, your adoration upon each thing I created to make you happy, I feel joy and happiness and glory being renewed in me, as in the act in which we issued the creation. So the joy he had in creating is actually renewed when he gets this response from us. You cannot understand the feast that you make for us. When we see your littleness, which wanting to embrace everything in our will, repays us in love and in glory for all created things. Our joy is so great that we put everything aside to enjoy the joy and the feast that you give to us. Therefore, this is the important bit. This is the biggest thing tonight. Therefore, to live in the supreme will is the greatest thing for us. And for the soul. It is the outpouring of the Creator over the creature. and outpouring himself over her, he gives her his own shape, makes her like God, and makes her share all of the divine qualities in such a way that we feel our works, our joy, our happiness being repeated in her, and we have reached our goal. The Lord has managed to divinize us with all his labor, all his sacrifice, all his grace, all his patience, and all his encouragement that he gives to us. So we leave it there for tonight, and thank you for joining us.